Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Sunday night for your Monday morning delivery. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you that are still on the 17th. Most of you are going to get this, obviously, for the 18th. Hell, maybe someone in Hawaii might actually get this on the 17th. We do it on Sunday nights to get it out a little quicker on Mondays. Honestly, we're just all pumped up usually from the night before the fights then. And then we kind of, it gives us time to separate our thoughts from Spinning Back Click, which is live on Mondays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. But anyway, it's a fun show today. Jeremy Kennedy's our guest. He's fighting for a world title over at Bellator in their championship series against Pitbull Frady. That's this week on Friday. We actually looked for the times and all that info right before the show. It looks like they're still holding on to it, but we promise on Thursday we'll sort you out because the fights are on Friday. So we'll have all that info for you on the second show of the week. So Jeremy Kennedy, all the latest news. We'll be right back to start the show. Goes. As much as I want to talk about Marcin Tybura and Tai Tuivasa, and there's really not much to it, it ended rather quickly, I still think some of the biggest news of the weekend was Jose Aldo's return.
Yeah, that's pretty big. It's strange, though, isn't it? I mean, if he's not seeing things coming at him around his last fight, I can't imagine what he would feel like now. You know, especially he's had some boxing and he's done fairly well. I think he's gone 2-0 in boxing, but MMA is just a different sport. And the guy they gave him is no joke. We're actually going to be speaking to him tomorrow. That guy's got a hell of a hit list going. And that's not an easy welcome back type fight, but it makes sense why they want Jose Aldo, because everybody else is booked up. You know, you need some star power, something to look good on paper. We look at this UFC that's coming this weekend. Rose Namajunas, Amanda Ribas. We love to see those fighters. But other than that, there's not much going on. You need these type of stars and at the top of your cards, because without them, it just really looks like everything suffered because of 298, 299, 300. That took a hit, man, for the UFC. As happy as we are to have these fantastic cards, it left them with not that much. And I'm pretty sure they probably went to Jose versus Jose coming to them and saying, you know, I need another fight. I bet you they went to Jose and said, dude, what can we give you to come back?
I saw it another way. I don't know. I've never thought that these fighters make big money. So, you know, obviously there's a few that do. And they don't spend much because NBA, MLB, and NFL, those athletes spend a lot of money too. MMA fighters, a lot of them are pretty grounded to an extent. And so who knows? Now, look, before the Dvalishvili fight, he had won two in a row. He may have thought, holy cow, this guy could just possibly be a future champion. Why am I getting so down on myself? Maybe I still got something left in the tank. They're coming to Rio. I thought he might have lobbed the call of them and just said, you know, I'd love to get back if you guys will have me. And I guess some of the questions would be, was he in the testing pool all this time?
Mm-hmm.
And, or are they going to use the exemption? I mean, we're now with a new outfit, Drug Sport Free International, but it sounded almost like they just basically do everything USADA does. So that's one question I have.
Yeah, it's odd, man. I think it's really weird that I'm happy. You know, it's good to see him. I think even a Jose Aldo that isn't what he used to be is still a tough fighter. But I think based on the guy that they're giving him, you can kind of tell in which direction they want this to go.
Well, you're right. Jonathan Martinez is solid. He's only 29. Jose Aldo's 37. Martinez has won six straight, including Swanson, Saeed Nurmagomedov, not to be confused with Umar Nurmagomedov, and then Adrian Yanez. So that's right around where Jose Aldo's at. He hasn't taken out Dvalishvili or Sanhagen or any of those top guys. But still, six in a row is pretty damn impressive. I think this one is winnable for Jose. It all depends on how good a shape he'll be in. Luckily, this thing's still a few months away. It's not 6 weeks or 6 days or week and a half or anything like that. It's on May 4th. And this was announced a few days ago, so maybe just inside of 2 months. We'll see. But it pumped me up a little bit because, sometimes, dude, a card just looks better when a legend's name's on it, even if they're not. How we all get excited about a Jim Miller? Like, we should get excited about a Jose Aldo. Now, what I'm just wondering again is, does he just need the money or did he not want to leave on a loss? What's the deal here?
It's just, if you look at all the facts, none of it to me says, hey, I'm a guy that thinks I'd like to give MMA another try, right? Like, unless you are actually hitting the mats, practicing your wrestling, your jiu-jitsu, all that, like, that timing, I think, is more difficult to get back than it is just striking. He's been doing striking his whole life, and he's been boxing. He's been using his hands. He's been working on footwork and his hands and speed and all that. To me, this just seems odd that it came that way. That's why I feel like it's something the UFC probably lobbed to him and said, look, we just need somebody. We need a face, and you fit that role. How about a lot of cash? Come back and do this. We'll see. I don't know, I'd like to see like how long this contract is for them or what for Jose, but it's good to see him back.
I agree. Well, maybe we'll get more information as this plays out in the next few days, but I'm really, really curious about the whole situation with drug-free sport international, one of those, just to see how they handle this, you know? I'm actually not one of those that cares too much. In other words, I do want a fair playing ground. I don't like when fighters... I mean, if they're all going to cheat, then they're all going to cheat. But what I'm saying is, what I don't like is for fighters to get caught, and it costs us fight. And that sounds very selfish. Costs us fights, but I know it sounds very selfish, but it also sucks when it costs you a result. You know, everybody forgets. I know Chill and DC were having some fun the other day on their new show. Let me see. What is it? Good Guy and Bad Guy or something like that. Bad Guy and Good Guy. And I guess DC at some point had said Chael isn't on the top five fighters, greatest fighters who never won a title, right? An undisputed title. Mm-hmm. And through it all, you know, Chael was reminding him, do you not remember when I, you know, fought Anderson Silva and I did this and I did that? And it was pretty funny. But he just brought me back to, had he won it, he wound up popping. So that would have ruined the title, you know, the whole, he would have had to give it back and Anderson would have been champ again. And so it just kind of muddies it a little bit.
For sure.
And that's why, that's one thing that this thing kind of cleared up for us. And so now I'm used to it. I'm just kind of used to a clean playing field.
Do you mind it in non-combat sports? In other words, how often do we ever hear LeBron James tested positive? Like, does it not matter to you in sports that don't have to do with combat?
I would say that I would rather be drug free. So it doesn't bother me, but it does. And the reason is because I feel like so much history and so many records were done without it. I think, I don't know. And so now if you do juice up athletes, it's going to rewrite record books. And I think what will happen is at some point they'll realize, oh, this isn't probably a good thing long term. So let's reverse it. And then what do you do about all those record books? So I think we started with a level playing field. Let's just keep it that way. And then as far as long term, I think what happened to Junior Seau and Mike Webster from the Steelers and other athletes, I think it was a combo of the hits, but I think painkillers and steroids also contributed to their well-beings, not just the hits leading to concussions is what I'm trying to say. So in the end, for that pleasure that we get of, these athletes are awesome and they're always healthy and they recover and this, that, whatever, I think long-term I would just rather it always be clean.
I've kind of gotten back to reading a little bit more, not to veer off here, but have you ever read Junior Seau's book?
No.
It's really sad, man. I for a player that I really like adored, loved watching, a guy that I feel like changed the game a little bit the way linebackers moved. He was so physical. Man, that book was so sad. And I'm going to look for it if you want to read it. I know you would like it.
You went cover to cover?
Yeah. And then you know what else I'm reading that I didn't even know existed until about a month ago. One of our listeners told us, Frankie Bustamante. Did you know there's a Warriors book?
No.
So I guess the movie was based off of a book. I mean, why am I acting dumb? I mean, I guess it was based off of a book.
But I think I do remember that part, yeah.
In the book, everything's like different, man. Like everybody's names, all the names are all different. The gangs are kind of the same, but yeah, it's pretty interesting. Anyways, yeah, if you're a Warriors fan like we are, we talk about it all the time. Check out that book. And then Junior Seau is just, yeah, it's a sad book, man, to hear what some of these guys have gone through. Changes their lives.
Anybody that's younger and is wondering, is he talking about the Golden State Warriors? No, we're talking about the movie The Warriors that came out in the late 70s. It was one of the original gang movies, followed by Colors and Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty others, but at least out of the ones we talk about a lot. Mm-hmm. And we quote a lot. Yeah, that movie's pretty epic. I'll have to check that one out. Anyway, I forgot where we even left off. Are we still on Aldo talk or what are we talking about?
We're talking about, you know, what his status would be as far as
we ever we'll got find out what it is. And I'm just, you know, like I say, if it turns out they made an exception, then they made an exception. You know, if you're going to ask me, is it right or wrong? I'm going to tell you it's wrong. But am I going to be okay with it on Fight Night? Yeah, I'm okay with it. Like, you know, it's one thing I've accepted is life is the way it is. It, you know, not everyone stops at red and goes at green or does the complete stop at the stop sign or pays every penny of what they owe in taxes. I know how life is, you know, and that's fine. That's why I don't get my panties all twisted up over things like that. But would I like it to be that way? Yeah. And we've now got about a decade under our belts of clean fighting and not losing main events, not losing results and overturning things. I kind of want to keep it that way. Did I enjoy the Pride era? Yes, I did enjoy the Pride era and them, you know, being able to fight the way they did and come back and do it again in 3 months. Like, yeah, I mean, that was pretty fun. I'm not gonna deny that, but let's move on. All right, so that was some big news. There's some other big news that we'll talk about probably on Spinning Backlick. Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal. It's kind of old news now. It's like 5 days old or so, but they're doing it in June, I believe, the same day as UFC 301. Same night as all. Wait, is it Aldo? 302 probably. It's 302.
It's the same.
No. 302 because this one's in May. 302 will be in June, and 303 will be in late June. So it's whatever 302 is, which I don't even think they built it yet. That's when these guys box. And are they both past their prime? Yes. Does that not mean that I'm not going to have fun watching it? I will. The one part that does wonder, though, is do they really give a shit? Like, do they really train or do they not? And so going back to the UFC, one thing that I used to enjoy that I've gone back and forth on is, you show up for 50 grand, I show up for 50 grand, and the winner takes home an extra 50 grand. Like, I do like that. And I don't want to sound like a hypocrite because I've said this before, but I also feel like the fighters should also get what they're worth, right? Mm-hmm. But man, it does feel, see, I think Nate Diaz could have beat Jake Paul Goose. I really do. So when you get all your money up front like that, you just never know if they're giving you their best. They're great athletes, so they can go 10 rounds, but did they go their 10 best, and did they win? And then you got to put up with their excuses. You know, you see Nate connect once, and then he points at the guy. Dude, go out there and finish him, you know, or continue the onslaught. That's one part that does bug me. Come fight night, I enjoy watching almost any fight, and I'll watch this one, and maybe if I'm back, I'll go to it. That's my only thoughts right now.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a little bit. We're going to talk about it again on Monday, but I guess my feelings haven't changed. To me, if Nate Diaz comes out and wins this fight, it sort of just proves nothing because, well, okay, Masvidal beat you in MMA, and isn't that kind of the compass for everything that we talk about? Which one is closer to a real fight?
Yeah. Right.
One guy won in MMA, one guy won in boxing. To me, the one that holds more value is the one in MMA. So even if Nate wins here, he kind of doesn't. I don't know. It's a fun fight, but it's not bad, and I'll tune in for sure. But it leaves you wondering, like, why them? You know, why not somebody else?
What do you mean somebody else?
Why do you want to fight Nate? That's what I don't understand. Like, why Masvidal was going out? Like, you've already proved your point. You've already beaten
Nate. Yeah.
Why not another name?
Yeah, no, you're right about that part. I felt like it was proven, and it was proven on the proven grounds that we like things to be proven. So I did tweet, I think, a retweet or repost or read something. Hey, let them do this in bare knuckle. I'm starting to really warm up to how raw bare knuckle is. Bare knuckle MMA looks like pretty fun, like it's, you know, fun as well. But yeah, with the boxing gloves, when the fighters start kind of holding and they're just cruising, like, I don't know. All right, that's all I'm going to give those two guys. They're fighting in June. Good for you guys. Good for you guys if you make a lot of money. I swear to God, I'm not jealous. Let's talk about the fights that took place. Martin Tabora submitted Tai Tuivasa, first round, rear naked choke. Yeah, this is going to sound weird, but I think Tuivasa's lost four in a row. I can tell, though, Goes, after covering the sport for so long, I can tell when a fighter is demoralized because they honestly gave you a good camp. Now, Tai Tuivasa is always going to come in and look sloppy, right? But he did look to me in better shape than I've seen him in other fights. And even when he was starting to fight the takedowns at first and trying to get up, it looked to me like a guy that's worked on a few things. He's just never really been that good on the ground. And he didn't look that good Saturday night, but he looked better than he had. So he went from like horrific to awful. I wish the fight would have went a little longer. He kind of hurt Tabora on the feet. So I would have wanted to see, okay, you got some of him on the feet. The other guy got some of you on the ground. Let's sit on the stool for a minute, and then let's come out guns a-blazing and see who can take over, you know? That's why that guy was devastated, because I could tell he finally, well, I don't know about finally, but he took this camp a lot more serious than others, and he came up on the losing end. So credit to Martin Tabora. I mean, he went after him with that choke. I didn't think he was going to get it, and he kept after him. Didn't look like the angles were there, the leverage was there. But he got it. And Tuivasa, you can't just lay there either and take shots and have someone be attacking your neck like that and not have more of a defense than to just kind of lay there. And he looked like he was moving his chin and trying to get it in a spot where he could get air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw something similar. It was kind of almost like a theme for the night. I think there might have been three fights like that where somebody got put in a position where you just went, I just think it's over. You know, like if this happened that easily and this early, it's a wrap. For Oday Osborne, you know, that kind of happened to him a little earlier in the card, mm-hmm. where you were just like, oh man, like no matter how much you've worked on this, it probably hasn't been enough time because this guy's probably dedicated their whole life to that. And with Ty Tuivasa, it just felt like the best he could do is maybe try and survive, but you already know what the recipe is for round two, round three, you know, like, it's so it almost like it didn't ruin the fight for me, but I was just kind of watching it going, man, Tuivasa's really just got that one shot, you know, like he's either going to get you with it. And if he doesn't, then it's a wrap for him. How long can that continue? And you're right. It does feel like he's addressed some things and tried. But like we've said before on the show, the UFC is no place to learn things. When you're in the UFC, you got to have it all dialed down right now because everybody else is trying to do the same thing, you know, and it's unfortunate. Like he doesn't seem like the type of guy that would just phone it in, especially when you're the main event. And this was just bad for him. You know, it sucks.
I kind of miss his knockouts and then the shoeies. Like he's got this, a shtick, I guess we'll call it, right? And I kind of miss it. Like, I haven't seen it for four fights. He's lost his four fights in a row. And I think he's been finished on all of them, two by submission, two by stoppage. So, literally, the last time he won was February 12th, 2022. Like, we're past 2 years since this guy's done the whole shoey thing. He's had a lot of time off between fights. He does fight killers, though. Gone, former interim champ. Pavlovich just fought for the interim title. Volkov, I don't think he's fought for a title yet, but he's been, you know, perennial all-star for a while. And then Tabora is actually maybe a step down from these guys. This was a winnable fight for him. So I don't think he'll get cut because heavyweights aren't as deep. And I think he brings something to the party from a part of the world where they like having, you know, a certain amount of good Australians and Poles and Japanese, and same goes for Australia. So I think he'll survive one more. But, yeah, like I just wanted that main event to play out a little longer.
Is, to me, in mixed martial arts, and maybe in combat sports in general, there are different levels to different fighters. When you're Ty Tuivasa and you're knocking people left and right, I feel like you fall in love with that. And you just say, hey, man, this is what's gotten me to here. I'm going to keep doing this to people. Instead of maybe using some of that time to focus on wrestling, jiu-jitsu, all that stuff, right? If you look at a guy like GSP, look at the time that he reigned. Even winning and being destructive the way he was, with the exception of Matt Serra, he was still altering things in his game. He was still seeking out different camps, different coaches, different looks. That's what I mean by different levels. Even when you're winning, you're still trying to improve. You're still trying to find different ways to make yourself better instead of maintaining what you have that's kept everybody down below you. That's what I think maybe Ty Tuivasa ran into. Probably made a lot of money doing it, you know, lots of knockouts, bonuses. But now it's kind of caught up to him. And I think it might just be too late to really churn things around. I'm with you. I think it makes more sense to have him on the roster than not. But I don't know how many more of those you can have, especially if they look that way.
Yeah, he's definitely not a title contender, but I think he can survive the roster. Kind of like the way a Neil Magny does, or maybe a Michael Johnson. You almost feel terrible saying about some of these guys that I really have a lot of respect for, but I think they're proper examples. Guys that as of late, they've just had more losses than wins, you know, but they have some name value to them.
Look at a guy like Josinho Rosenstruck. Doesn't it feel like he has addressed things? He has been trying to get better. He has turned it around. Like, I don't know if Ty has that in him still, but it can be done.
I think so. You could tell where his arms were when Tabora was trying to take him down. You could tell he was trying to think through the sequences, right, of getting like underhooks or fighting wrist control. I'm not saying that happened on the ground, but, you know, same thing when he was on the ground was the opportunities to get up. He looked like he was doing it, but Tabora is actually really a decent grappler. So it's one thing to train it. It's another thing to be in there with a world-class athlete, you know. And plus, I'm sure there's a lot of pressure from being down or being 0-3. You know, so you're probably not full of confidence when you come in. Neither was Tabor. He was coming off a loss to Aspinall, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a place for him. I think he's got a shtick going. I think that's what makes him valuable, is that, you know, the whole shoey thing. He's from Australia. He likes to bang. He likes to throw down. You know, he's from West Sydney. That's how we get down, that type of thing.
You said it, though. I think it's that look where he just kind of looked demoralized once he got taken down. That says so much. Who was it the other day? Was it on the pay-per-view? Somebody that just took like 30 hammer fists until finally one of them just gave out. Do you remember that?
Jailton Almeida?
There you go. Tai Tuivasa was taking some shots like that, where he was just willing to take them. And you can't do that in MMA. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It was like, you see that and you go, man, like, this isn't high level.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. In the co-main event, Brian Battle and Ange Lusa went to a no contest. I understand why Battle was upset. Most of the time, fighters continue when they get poked in the eye. Most of the time, fighters that are losing fights and get poked in the eye still continue. But we can't prove that his eye wasn't fucked up. I've always given two examples. I've gotten hit in the nuts hard by a football or a baseball or whatever, basketball. Straight, man, just straight. And it hurts. They all hurt. And then I've gotten a grazer, you know, and I thought it hurt more. So all shots to the nuts are different. And then same thing with the eye pokes. Just there's little times where, you know, you could be playing with your dog and if he just kind of like scratches your eye, you're like, whoa, hold on a second, you know, and you walk away and you got to rinse it out, you know, and then there could be someone else that really kind of thumbs you pretty good, like maybe even with more force, and you're like, whoa, and it's, you might take less longer to, you know, clear that or whatever. So not all eye pokes, not all groin strikes are the same. He wasn't losing by that much. I mean, yeah, I guess Battle took it to him pretty good. But, you know, Ange wasn't like super cut up or bruised up or an eye closed or anything. So I thought it was a bit much for him to say, I was owning you everywhere. I mean, he was beating him, yeah. But that's how fights kind of go. Just because you're winning early on, it doesn't mean you're going to, you know, win the fight. So I thought if he would have told him something, I don't know. I guess most of the times fighters just shake hands and move on. It kind of looked a little bizarre for him to like really go on about this.
It was weird. I went back and forth on it a little bit. So there's a lot of things to address here, in my opinion. One is, I feel like the I can't see thing, I feel like you wait till the very end to make that call, right? 4 minutes and 50 seconds, I think, is when you finally make that call. The other thing is, the second he said it, the commentators were like, no, what are you doing? You know, the fight's going to get stopped. And I get where they're coming from. But if you can't legitimately see, you can't go out and fight. I just think you need to maybe give it till the end to say that.
Right. But
who knows? Like, if I mean, trust me, you can tell if you can't see nothing, it's probably not going to come back, let alone back enough to actually continue a fist fight. That I get, you know, you can make that call at 2 minutes and 30 seconds or whatever. But if it's just like blurry and it hurts, maybe give it till the very end and then make that call. But when the commentators just explode like that, like, hey, if he can't see, then that's the right call. You know, if you can't see, you can't fight. So there was that. Then I even kind of chuckled a little bit at Brian Battle's logic behind everything that happened. And he basically said, look, man, if this dude's willing to fight me now, why didn't he fight me, you know, a couple minutes ago when he couldn't see? That I get. But I think when you're the guy that does the
eye poke, since then, too.
Huh?
Time's gone by since then, too, because.
But probably enough time that could have finished it off, right?
They'll wave it off. And yeah, exactly. They wave it off. They go to a commercial. Then Buffer gets in there and says, hey, because of what happened, this, that, what. I mean, like, that's literally 2-3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I think Ange is just, or we'll call him Lusa. I think he's just angry at that point. So whatever he's saying out of his mouth, he's like, fuck you, and you know, this, that, or whatever. So that's just rage. But yeah. No, that's not how he would want to be fighting. He'd rather be fighting with two good eyes. But my thing is, battle caused it. I mean, it was a clear eye poke. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He's just counting on the fact that others have gone on and fought. But Brian Battle can't make that judgment, and we can't make that judgment. Only he can. Will he take some heat? Yes, because most fighters continue. But if he says he couldn't, then I kind of believe him, you know, and that's that. Now, what you were saying, if a referee or a doctor says, can you see, you have 5 minutes. So what you can say is, give me a second, please. And you can request a towel, and I think they can squirt water in your eyes. And so, but can you see? Hang on a second. I'm clearing my eyes. But what you don't want to say is the yes or the no. I mean, if you say yes, then I suppose they're going to ask you a follow-up question, right? And if you say no, they wave it off.
Things are a little blurry. It's clearing up right now. Just give me a second.
Yeah. I'm going to be good. Just give me a second. You know, I got 5 minutes. The fighter should know that. The corner should know that. The referees kind of know to guide you closer to the 5 minutes rather than come with that question. But once the doctor's in there, it's out of their hands. But if they say that, you just go, I'm good. I just need a few more minutes. And you say it until you can see. Or you're at the end. And then if you can't see, then you can't see. I understand that. If you're ballsy enough to go in there with one eye, I get it. But yeah, you just want to get away from saying, no, I can't see, if what you want to do is continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
OSP, age 40, gets it done against Kennedy and Chuck Wu. Kind of thought in Chuck Wu might have won this, but it was close. But dude, it was kind of cool to see an OG win. At 40, it looked like, hey, this could be his last one. But he was out there. He was banging. He was taking some shots. He was delivering some shots. But he showed up, did his whole 15 minutes, and then he got a close decision, man. Like, God bless him. You know, like, he's had a pretty long career. Never made it to a title fight that I remember. But still, I think we called him a top 10 guy for a long time.
Yeah, he's hanging in there. It was funny to see in the press conference him just kind of being happy of shutting a lot of people up that were showing him the door. But you also have to understand that just because you're sticking around doesn't mean like we're trying to thrust you into a title shot or anything like that. But he's shown that he deserves to have a job, and it should be at the highest level. And I still enjoy watching him fight. I thought it was a good fight, though.
Yeah, and I stand corrected. Goes, he did fight for the interim title against John Jones. I forgot about that. And he actually didn't look half bad. And we all said, well, John Jones doesn't look that good tonight.
Yeah.
So it's a solid career. I don't know if he's done or not, but that looked like the relief of, yes, I still probably have my job if I want it. Yes, I can still do this at a high level. Yes, I get that win bonus as well. It looked like a relieved fighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good on OSP getting a win. He had lost to Philippe Lenz before that. He beat Shogun before that. He'd only fought once in 2021, 2022, 2023, and 2024, which we still got 9 more months to go in 2024, so that might change. But he really hadn't been fighting much as of late. And since 2020, now let's go back a little further. Since 2018, he's... let's see, what is that? 5-3, 4-6. So he just hasn't been on the best run, but I was still happy for him. I still remember his Von Prue chokes, the run that he was on. Played football at Tennessee, for those of you that don't know. He's a linebacker. So that was pretty cool. We'll go through the rest of the card in just a sec. Let's talk about Jeremy Kennedy, though. He has been punching the clock for a long time. Bellator, PFL, UFC. Holds a decent record, man. So he deserves this. You know, him wearing Pico was going to get it. It's going to be Jeremy Kennedy this Friday in Belfast, Ireland, against Patricio Pitbull Frady. And we'll be right back with Jeremy Kennedy. Junkie Nation, what's going on? Gorgeous George and Goes are back with Jeremy Kennedy, title challenger, on March 22nd out in Northern Ireland, Belfast to be exact.
He challenges the great Patricio Pitbull Frady for his Bellator featherweight title. What's going on, Jeremy?
Not a lot, man. Just excited to be doing this finally now, you know? So it's good.
Is it worth the wait?
I mean, not during. During the wait, it was not. But now that it's here and it all worked out, it definitely was worth the wait.
Did you get better in between the time you weren't fighting, which is, I guess, a lot of times we want you guys fighting all the time, staying active, but, you know, we know that a lot of times your best improvements come from that time off.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's probably one of the bigger benefits was not fighting, but still training, you know, like I was going to be getting that fight, you know, it was right around the corner every time, you know, it was going to be right after he dropped down to 35, regardless, he was going to be coming up to defend. So I was training for that. Then the short notice thing in Japan happened. So then they were going to move it around, do an interim title or something like that near the end of the year. So I was training for that. And then when that all fell through and the sale, the buy, everything, I was still staying hopeful training because I knew that shows were going to get back up and going again in like January, February is what I thought. So I was training all the way through the holidays. And then I got news like literally right after Christmas for Belfast. And it was after, you know, the champ versus champ thing had been announced. So I knew I couldn't wait any longer. Just circumstances just kept happening that were out of my control. So I just wanted to move on. I wanted to get a fight in. And it was still, you know, a number one contender fight. It was still a billing. It was going to just have me fight again, you know. And I had to get my job done. And then I was still going to get that same opportunity just later on in the year. And so it just kept me training the whole year through. My main training partner, Kai Kamaka, he was booked like 3 or 4 times all last year. So I was just doing back-to-back camps with him constantly. That was keeping me motivated, keeping me in the gym, keeping me learning and studying different opponents. We were, you know, looking at Akhmed Magomedov. And then we were looking at Corrales. So we just had different bodies, you know, Adley Edwards. So he had a bunch of different guys, and I was helping him all along through those. While waiting for my opportunity. So it just kept me in the gym, kept me learning. And yeah. And then when I got this switch, I'd already been in camp. So, and I've spent a year training for Pitbull. So, I mean, there wasn't a crazy big transition. It just went back to my roots of what the game plan was all year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy the way this sport unfolds. He had possibly Jesus Pinedo ahead of him.
Yep.
And then that fell through. We know that at the same time, you know, Aaron Pico was making a run at trying to be a title challenger.
Yeah.
Although the timing of his fight may have helped you, you know, basically because he just fought, I guess.
Yeah.
And so you being available, you having a win over him, you having a win streak, like it worked out. You know, it took a while, but it looks like the it worked fight, out.
Yeah, exactly.
You get him. You get him in Northern Ireland for the title. Do you care about locations? Like, it's not in Brazil, so you're not in enemy territory, but it's also not in the States. It's, like, just in another part of the world. Is that cool for you to pull away from family and distractions for a week and go work, or is that stressful for you? What's that like?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been, like, the story of my career, essentially. I've been fighting guys in their hometown, and Belfast was going to be no different. I was fighting Gallagher originally, so it was going to be a hometown crowd thing, you know, fought Volk in Australia, Honey Jason in Brazil. It seems like I've always been on the road. And so I think the only time I was fighting like locally was when I was in the PFL tournament and, you know, I was living out here in Vegas and they were, you know, within the US. That was like a full year of domestic shows. But other than that, I've been traveling overseas for my fights for as long as I can remember. So it's kind of natural for me. You know, I know what to pack, I know what to bring, I know what to expect on the other side or what not to expect, I guess. It's just a little bit harder with the travel, you know, now that I have a baby as well, and I like to bring the family along and everything. So little things are changing, but again, I would have fought him in Brazil. It's just pretty random that I'm fighting him in Ireland now. I was anticipating States or Brazil ideally, but, yeah, I don't care. I like the hometown. I like being spoiler. This one's just going to be different because now I'm spoiler to the champ, not necessarily in his backyard, but still it doesn't matter. It's I'm going there to upset some people and win this belt.
We just spoke to him and he says the numbers don't lie. He pretty much thinks he is the best fighter ever in Bellator history. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, again, you can't really fault him. Numbers don't lie. You know, that's a resume he's spent a decade or more, you know, putting together. So to me, to try to like diminish that just doesn't even make sense. You know, it's, he is for sure the record holder. You know, when you think about Bellator, especially Bellator featherweights, that's Pitbull. You know, that's who I've watched from the beginning and I've always kind of had my eye on. Just even when I was in the UFC and out of Bellator and looking at, Bellator's always had a good 45 division. You know, the Emmanuel Sanchez's, the Daniel Weichels, like all those guys coming up. I was always watching and I thought I matched up great with them. And so when I made the transition over, I couldn't wait to get my feet wet with all those kind of guys, you know. And Sanchez was also, was one of them, a guy that I watched well beyond when being on my radar. I thought I matched up well. And now Pitbull was another one. He was the champ forever. And I always just thought, you know, he's a little undersized, but somehow he just made it work time and time again. And I didn't think that would be the case facing me. And now I get to finally go prove that.
I asked him if he thought he was past his prime because, you know, this is the first time he's ever lost two in a row.
Yep.
And he's coming off the two fights in a row. He says he didn't really answer directly, but he says he can't wait to prove people that he's not. What would you say? I mean, he's a little higher in age, a lot of wear and tear. Yep. You know, that means a lot of training camps, a lot of weight loss, a lot of travel. What would you say about that? I'm sure you're training for the best pit bull, but, you know, our eyes don't deceive us either.
Yeah, I mean, I'm exactly like you said. I'm training like I'm fighting the best pit bull. You know, I have to. That's the way I approach every fight. And it's hard because there is a lot of little speculations around those losses. You know, he hasn't lost that 145, you know, so he's still, in my eyes, he's that undisputed, that multi-time champion, 145, you know, like who's beat him at 45. So he had the 35 loss and then that short notice thing in Japan, which again, there's a lot of like, that was short notice, short, quick after losing all that weight to fight up a weight class. So there, I'm not even making excuses for him. It is what it is. I can't go off of all this guy's losses last two because, you know, they're different weight classes. He's going down. He's not the faster, you know, faster guy down at 35. And we saw that. And I picked up a lot of things there that I saw holes. And then the Japan thing, I mean, what can you really gauge off of 2 minutes of whatever, you know, on a 3-day notice fight? So I'm fighting the multi defending champion 145 Pitbull, and age, there's that 35 rule thing going around. And I mean, he was still winning at 35, his last couple wins, I think Borix and Kleber, he was both 35 there. So, I mean, I don't think his age, that was only a year and a half ago. So that doesn't really put too much weight on it. I mean, for me, I think the biggest thing that sticks out to me was that cut to 35, not his age, not the wear and tear, just the frame, the size, the fact that he could even make that weight. I just know I'm a bigger human than him. I just know I'm a lot more physical of featherweight than he is, because I couldn't even dream about making 140, you know? So the fact that he could and did, and not even that long ago, like within a year, I don't think he's going to be able to put on the muscle properly to even compare with me physically, you know? So I think that's the biggest one I'm taking away, is I just think he's going to be too small. But again, he has fought his whole career as a pretty undersized featherweight, so he's made it work. But I just plan on what I've always thought, you know, he's a little undersized, and I plan on showing that by just being too physical and too dominant everywhere.
Jeremy, what was it like when you hung up the phone after you got the news? Who was the first person, like first couple people you told, and what were just the emotions that went through you?
I'm kind of a nerd, but it's funny. Yeah, it was super late at night because it was the time change. It was early morning weigh-ins over there in Saudi. So I woke up, got the FaceTime, woke my wife up, shook her. She was still asleep. She's like, all she said was like, oh, cool. Fell back to sleep. So she didn't even really process it. And I didn't get what I wanted from her. So I called my parents because they were coming out to Belfast already to explain, you know, the big change up. They're pretty involved in my career, and they spent all last year, you know, waiting for me to be announced against Pitbull. So then to get to call them and tell them, hey, it's not the Gallagher, and we are going. You're already booked. Everything's happening, and it is Pitbull. So in 4 weeks, so they were ecstatic, and man, I like couldn't go back to sleep. So I was just fired up, and it was good, man. Yeah, I can't even describe it. It took like probably 2 or 3 days to actually sink in that I was not fighting Gallagher and I was fighting Pitbull, and to start shifting that focus to him. But I was just on cloud nine. It was crazy.
And, you know, like we mentioned, I think before the interview, it feels like this has just been something that's been up in the air for years.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that, you know, when you had different opponents in between, you were probably training for the champion, thinking I'm going to be there any second. Yeah. How much has changed from the first time you kind of set a plan towards how you would fight Pitbull to what it's like now? Has it been very different, or
a little bit different? More so, just because I've noticed his style change a little bit. Not in a sense of like he's lost a step. He's just he approaches them differently. You know, he's not too much of a, like an aggressive get in your face. You know, get the punches in. He's a lot more technical. Fights a little safer now. Good distance control and a big counter puncher. So for a guy that size to be a really good counterpuncher is tricky. You know, you got to approach a fight properly. And a lot of the times he catches these guys who are just trying to rush in and fight him like a bull is when he gets those counters. So, and then again, my style, I kind of get right in your face, you know, from the first bell. So I've approached, I'm looking at things a little differently. 5 rounds. He knows how to fight 5 rounds really well. He's done it his whole career. I've only ever done it once, and that was regional scene, you know, and so it is a different beast. So I'm approaching things a little differently, more methodical, more technical. And, I think it's going to allow me to show my full game, you know, rather than, you know, as soon as I get my hands on a guy, typically that's a wrap, you know, they're not getting back up and I'm controlling them and I'm beating them up and whatever. And now this one is not necessarily a fight that I can just go out there, grab a hold of him, dump him on his head and then have my way with him. You know, it's something I'm gonna have to be methodical about and chop him down and get to show, you know, my striking, everything from the feet to the floor, and within 5 rounds too. You know, like there's nobody can go out there and redline for five rounds, you know, hard grappling right out the gate. So it's, I know he's expecting me to be jumping on him right away and he's going to be defending takedowns all night, but I don't think that's going to be the case.
For the longest time when we interview you, it's always been around Bellator fighters. And now it's like we have this new pool of PFL guys. Is there like a, and this isn't to say you're not focused on what's ahead of you, but is there a little bit of a PFL hit list? I mean, they have a lot of great fighters at your weight class. It just seems so much fun when we match your name up against some of these guys. Are there any that stand out that can you, would you rather just stick to fighting Bellator guys, or can you not wait till you get into the PFL guys?
Yeah, I definitely want to, I really like that cross promotion kind of, you know, PFL versus Bellator, Bellator versus Ryzen. Like I was always trying to get on those Japanese cards, but this is another opportunity. You know, I want that belt. I want that little ring, you know, so Pinedo, whoever's the champ really is got my eye just because they're the best guy on the other side, you know? So Bellator though, like that's, I want to win this belt and I want to defend it. And I want to, you know, be a long lasting champ. I want to replace Pitbull in that sense of being the guy at 145. And, but that, yeah, that entices me, the cross promotion. There's a lot of good names and more so a lot of fresh names. You know, I've Bellator's division, I've been studying and looking at these guys and fighting all of them. And now the fact that there's a whole new list of guys with all just as good of credentials and big of name value and everything, it just opens the door wide open that like, I want to fight all of them, you know, everybody. And just to see where I match up with and build my resume. And I want those names on my record. And but it all starts with Pitbull because that's what's going to give me these opportunities. And that's the biggest name I want anyways. You know, if that one right there winning the title against the longest defending champion. And I don't think there's been another 45 champ in Bellator since the beginning. So, I mean, I don't know, but for as long as I can remember, it's been him. So to be able to be the one that to dethrone him at 145, yes, he's lost at 35 and 55, but to be that guy that beats him in his weight class, it's going to be special, man.
It was McKee before Pitbull, but yeah.
But yeah, for that like real quick switch. Yeah.
Yeah. They're one and one, but McKee's at 55. I'd love to see a year where you fight Pitbull, Pinedo, and Pico. That'd be one hell of a 2024.
Yeah, that would be a man. That would be a big year, definitely. And exactly, like on the Bellator side, there's still options. You know, there's Pico's got to be fighting. You know, he's right there next in line too. You know, it was me and him neck and neck getting this title shot and timing and whatnot. And I was worried that Saudi, you know, he was on the card and that something might have happened there. And I was already booked. But they wanted to keep the PFL Bellator thing going, which worked in my favor. And then timing worked for once in my, for me, it was like, that was the logical step, you know, all year when I was waiting for Pitbull, it always seemed like, yeah, it was a kind of a stretch, you know, and how can I, you know, contest him going down to challenge for a third belt. And it's like, oh no, he should fight me instead. Like, no, that realistically, if I'm being a smart, like Bellator rise, that's the fight you want to put together. And then finally, this is the one that was for me. Like, this is the fight that made sense. Pitbull wanted to fight again. Bellator, they wanted two title fights every card. They got it now. I was the number one contender. I've got my title shot. Pitbull's got his fight. And it works out great. And after I get this belt, who knows what happens next? And there's a lot of options.
Is it tough when a fight, not that it's late notice, like a week, but still an international fight? Well, then again, you were already scheduled to fight Gallagher, so never mind. I was just going to say, was it hard to put together everything, you know, that you would want? You want the most ideal situation when you fight for a title. So did you get that?
I mean, as best as I could. Getting the fight in general, like I would have fought in Saudi. If they would have called me and said, hey, you need to be there this weekend, you know, I would have done it. But this is probably one of the best circumstances outside of actually just getting the fight booked originally, full 8-week camp, whatever. I mean, I'm already fighting. I already have my flights booked. Everything's settled for Ireland. And it was 4 weeks. And the only difference was opponent, who I've already been training and game planning with all my coaches for a year.
Right.
For longer. And then five rounds instead of three, which cardio has always been one of those things I rely on anyway. So it was just upping that. And I had a month to do that, is to make those little adjustments from a 3-round fight to a 5-round fight. I wouldn't say a little, like that's tough. That's a lot of work, but making that adjustment. And then again, with Pitbull, I've had a game plan with all my boxing coach, my kickboxing coach, my head, Eric, everybody. Like, we already have our own little routes and game plan for him that we've worked all year. So it's just a matter of forgetting what we were doing with Gallagher and going back to what we've been working on for Pitbull. So again, just Julian, my teammate, fights the same night. So in a perfect world, I could have my whole team there, but I'm kind of limited on who I'm bringing out there with me. But that would have been against Gallagher. That would have been against Pitbull. That would have been against anybody. Just fighting on that date is just on the, you know, across the ocean is just never easy. And nothing's going to work out perfectly. And I'm sure Pitbull's got the same thing. He was just in Saudi Arabia and he just made weight and he had fight week already. And now he's had to travel back home. There's jet lag and now he's got to go back out there again. And he's going to have another jet lag or whatever. He's going to lose a week of fight week. So there's tons of things that I can worry about myself about things not going right. But nothing is always going to be perfect. And I just control every little thing that I possibly can. And it makes everything easier.
You really follow the sport pretty well, man. You kind of know a lot about events, the fighters, where they're at. That's pretty cool. Would you ever want to be behind a mic in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a nerd when it comes to MMA, and I follow, especially at 45, I follow everything. And that's why all along throughout that PFL thing, I had to focus on my fight. But, you know, Pinedo's dropping out, Braga's coming in, Lockney might have jumped in at 55, there's Pico on the table, Corrales is flying. Like, I was following along on all of that, you know, and so for it to work out for me, it was great. And it just pays off to be paying attention to all these little things and everybody in my division, from the PFL brackets to Bellator guys and all the guys going over there. But to answer your question, I mean, yeah, I think after fighting, I'm still going to be so invested into fighting just because it's my entire life. And I like both sides of it. You know, I like even the fan side of it, like staying back in the matchups of not including me, but other people, different promotions, everything like that is interesting to me. So definitely probably transition to that in one little piece. I don't know if people want to listen to me talk, but some part of me will definitely be involved in that kind of behind the scenes MMA stuff when I'm done.
Your voice sounds like Tom Brady. I don't know if anyone's ever told you that. You kind of sound like him a little bit. You okay. smile like Sam Alvey. You know, you always okay. have a smile on your face. You sound kind of like Tom Brady. But I'll tell you why I told you this, because one time Michael Chiesa came to the studio. We were talking about his weight class. He was a lightweight at the time, like maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And we had a friend. Remember John Stelfragos from Fox Sports? And he would listen to our show. And a lot of times he gave tryouts to fighters based on hearing them come into the studio and co-host with us for 2 hours because of the way they would answer callers and break down. And he knew exactly what was going on in his division before the show was even over.
Yeah,
I just go, hey, how you doing? He goes, I know exactly what you're going to tell me. And he brought him in for a tryout. He did well. This was the mullet guy back in the day. You know, now you see him, you know, working the desk there with ESPN. But it kind of almost reminds me of that. Hopefully that's something you explore. Okay, I think you'd be really, really good at it.
I appreciate that. And yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. But first things first, the 22nd of March out in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Best of luck with that fight, the training camp, the weight loss, the travels. I know it's a long time coming. You deserve it. And we see it a lot at Extreme Couture. You're always in there grinding. So we hope the best for you against the great Pitbull, too. You know, it's one thing to win the title, but when you can take it off a legend, man, that even elevates you even more. And I'm sure you know this because, again, you follow the sport.
Yeah, that's how big this fight is. Yeah, exactly. I know. I really appreciate it. It feels like we've been talking about this for a long time, especially with you guys. Every time I come on, and now here it is. So it's time to go seize the opportunity. It's one thing getting the opportunity, but now it was a bit of a parade when I first got it. Everyone's congratulating me, but I'm like, you know, it's congratulate me after the fight. You know, like this is I got the opportunity, but I need to capitalize on it, and that's where all my focus is right now.
Right on, Jeremy. Thanks for the time.
Oh, man.
We'll talk to you soon. And we'll definitely see you around at the gym, no matter what. All right, we'll see.
Appreciate it, guys.
Well, you know, when they say it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, this guy really is pretty nice, to tell you the truth. He's one of the nicer guys over at Extreme Couture. Always approachable, always smiling. And look, in the end, he did beat Aaron Pico, and I thought it was the two-horse race here, and Aaron Pico just fought, so this guy was ready. So good for him.
Waited a long time for it, too.
He sure did. He hasn't fought since February of last year. He's got a 3-fight win streak, including, again, Aaron Pico. So we'll see what happens against the great Pitbull Frady, who we've also interviewed. And he says, hey, I've lost 2 in a row, but I'm not on my downside just yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this will be a fun fight. He did a good job of breaking that down. He gave Pitbull his props. I think Pitbull does, like they said, the numbers don't lie. Both of them said it.
Christian Rodriguez defeated Isaac Dulgarian. That was pretty controversial, man. Dulgarian was wrestling his ass off, throwing Rodriguez around. A lot of people felt like he won a 10-8 round in round one. And then in round two, he was kind of doing a lot of the same, but Rodriguez landed a couple key strikes that may have won back that round. Mm-hmm. And then in the last round, Rodriguez clearly won it. In fact, some people were saying that could be a 10-8 as well. So I knew scores were going to be all over the place. They were actually pretty consistent, 28-27 for Rodriguez. So 10-8s were being given out for sure. It's just that in round two of the judges felt that Rodriguez did enough to offset all that grappling that Dulgarian was doing. But Dulgarian was, all over him. So that was pretty controversial. What did you think of that one?
I thought it was a good fight. It was fun back and forth. I hadn't watched it close enough, though, to really say, like, it's got to be like this. But I did give a 10-8. I thought that was enough.
Which round?
Three.
With Dulgarian in round one?
No, I think wasn't it round three?
Well, Dulgarian, I think, was pretty consistent, 10-8. I think we all agreed on that in round one. Mm-hmm. I mean, he threw them all over the place. Round two went to Rodriguez 10-9 on Ron McCarthy's card and Sal D'Amato's card. Anthony Maness, I've heard of him. He's a veteran judge. He had a 10-8 Dulgarian. I thought either one was right, but I thought it was going to be 10-8 or 10-9 Dulgarian in round two. Then the 10-8s in round three, I kind of agreed with that one too. I went on MMA decisions, everyone had it for either Dulgarian or they just had it a draw. So I kind of understand why this is being tabbed a robbery, but I also saw why it could be given to Rodriguez, because the new criteria can't emphasize this enough. Damage. You can grapple your ass off, throw someone, toss them, do whatever, but if you're not injuring them or attempting to finish the fight, you're slowly accumulating points. Whereas if I won to you and your knees buckle, could sway back the round. Everything that you've done to me for 4 minutes, all out the window.
Yeah.
Macy Chasson finished Pani Khanzad pretty quick, round one submission. I think she did that to her a few years ago as well after one of the toughs. Gerald Nearshard defeated Brian Barberina. I don't like Barberina at middleweight.
Too small.
Yeah. Mike Davis defeated Nathan Levy. Chelsea Handler. Chandler defeated Josiane Nunez. Jafel Filio defeated our boy, Oday Osborne. Kind of bummed out that it all happened so quick like that. Danny Silva, Jacqueline Amarim, Thiago Moises, Chad Anlinger all got their hands raised. The bonuses. There was no fight of the night, but the bonuses, the performances went to Marcin Tybura, Macy Chasson, Jafel Filio, and Jacqueline Amarim. Now, there was more finishes than those four. There was a total of 1, 2, 3, 4 on the undercard, and 1, 2, 2 on the main card. So if they wanted to give all the finishers a bonus, two got screwed. And I'll tell you who they are. It looks like Davis with his submission. And Moises with his TKO stoppage. He didn't get one either. The leg kicks. So what are you going to do? Apex cards have kind of given me this attitude of like, it's such a blasé card that, I don't know, it doesn't feel like a big deal to me enough for me to bitch about it. Does that make sense?
Probably, yeah. And plus, they're not taking in as much money as they are on a pay-per-view.
I like fight nights, but I like fight nights when they hit the road. When they're just at the apex, it just seems like a lazy, let's mail it in by the UFC. I'm not coming at the athletes. The athletes did their job. You go out and try and win fights. It's the Super Bowl for all of them. But the other stuff just seems like, you know, and I don't even hear that many fighters get vocal about it. So it's like they don't seem to care as much either. So I'll let it go. I think everyone in Miami got bonuses. I was happy about that. But that's the card. That's the card, man. That was it. Like I say, Bellator's this weekend. We'll be doing the watch along. We'll be doing a watch along for 300. Still about a month away. But no, we'll be doing spinning back like we do every Monday. Noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, and 11 a.m. if you're in Peru. Mark Coleman is out of the woods from the coma that he was in because of the fires, right? The inhalation that he had and all that. But then he's back in the hospital because he's got pneumonia.
Yeah, that's scary, man. Especially, you know, considering what the smoke inhalation probably did to his lungs. It's like it builds up, you know, along the lining. You have to take that out. So to have pneumonia on top of that, that's actually pretty scary. But look, if there's anybody that's proven they can get through that, it's Mark Coleman. And our thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family, and hopefully he can. You know, the good thing is he's in the hospital. People are looking after him, and hopefully that doesn't turn into something worse.
Yeah, we'll obviously on Junkie and Goes and I on our show or Spinning Back, like when we hear updates, we'll give them to you. What did you think of, I know this is an MMA show, but we talk about this all the time. In fact, I know a lot of junkies are riding with us. Was that Man U Liverpool game crazy or what today?
That was insane. It was a roller coaster. It was, how can I put it to you? It was such highs and lows, just slapping you in the face over and over. And for once, the other team kind of probably had the same feeling that we normally end up having, but you couldn't be happier. You couldn't have asked for a better story. I couldn't imagine what it would have been like being in that stadium, especially hearing all them Liverpool idiots singing their songs and making fun, and just seconds later having to eat crow like that. It probably hurt just having the game tied up, but then giving it up. Oh my God. Like, how do you even walk out of that stadium?
Yeah, you see those guys celebrating when they're up 2-1 after they were down 1-0, and then 3-2 when it had all been tied up. They kept panning to some of the fans, and they were just so happy, and I was so furious that I wish I could be teleported to that stadium and just stand in front of them and flip them off. How does it feel? You know, shut the fuck up. Yeah. Go home, you fucking loser. You remember Carlito's Way when Sean Penn killed that Italian mobster, and he goes, how does that feel with you and the eels crawling out of your eyeballs or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was having a few drinks with our cousin Fernando, so we were all into it. But, dude, it was just an exciting game, man. Those guys are incredible athletes. We figured out that they did 90 minutes plus another 30. That's 120. Plus, at the end of the first, it was 4 minutes that were given, but they went about five. And at the end of the second, I think it was 4 minutes, but they went about five. So that's like another 10. That's 130 minutes. And then whatever injury time there may have been on the extra time, they literally ran sprints for 135 minutes, which is over 2 hours long. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them went the whole 90 minutes. I mean, Garnacho, dude, that guy like would not stop running.
Young legs, right? But some of the other guys, like a Lindelof or something, that's probably a little tougher on guys like that.
Yeah, I hope he manages, you know, and gives a few of those guys the day off. But now they go to the semifinals, which means they get to play those games at Wembley Stadium. So that'll be a cool setting. And they're going to compete for a major title, you know, against you see Chelsea, Man City. Have they already done the draw? Do you know?
I don't think so.
Okay, I know they usually do them pretty quick. Obviously, it'd be nice if those two giants played each other. And I think the other team's Coventry, or I don't even know who it is. Holy shit, they already did it, Goes.
They did?
Yeah, it's Man United and Coventry, so we got our wish. Yeah, Chelsea looks like we'll have to duke it out with Manchester City. Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's finish out with a couple things that I kind of found interesting. I don't know if you saw them. Did you see John Jones and Tom Aspinall?
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
So, like, that interaction. I don't want to say I'm a John Jones hater. I saw John Jones do something one time that just rubbed me the wrong way. This was years ago. But lately, this new John Jones, whatever you want to call it, because a lot of people just say he's fake and he's just this guy until he gets in trouble again, right? But this new John Jones, the way he's handled some things, some smack talk, some interactions, I've actually been okay with it. And this one was pretty cool. You know, I applaud.
Why didn't you want to do the pose off though? The face off. Like, what was he like? Oh no, like, oh God, that could lead to so much trouble.
I think he just doesn't want to fuel a fight that he doesn't want. You know, like, I don't think that he doesn't believe that he can't beat Aspinall. I think he thinks he can, but I think him and the UFC understand the value of having that Stipe Miocic fight. I think he looks at it as it's an easy win and it's a big paycheck, and he doesn't want to lose out on that because he thinks he can do them both, right? So I kind of get that, and I imagine he just doesn't want to throw more fuel on that fire. I thought it was funny, the arm thing and the reach, that was pretty hilarious. But that's to make a good point, you know. Why give anybody
what that? Was the arm thing? Because I know that Aspinall put his hand on his shoulder and the other guy removed it. So what's the reach and what's the arm thing? Did I miss one thing?
So if I put my arm on your shoulder,
right,
I'm expecting you to put yours on mine, and right. What that tells you is kind of like it gives you a little gauge of what that reach is, that distance, you know.
Okay. Okay,
and so that's John Jones saying, I'm not going to give you that. No, just take your hand down. I thought that was funny. I thought he handled it well. It's a kind of like an old boxing thing that they used to do in boxing. Mm-hmm. But I thought that whole interaction was good. I thought Aspinall couldn't have been nicer. I thought John Jones handled himself well. But it was fun to kind of see those two together and what could come from a fight like that.
Yeah. I guess I didn't know that part. When he kind of waved off his arm, I thought he was just kind of like big leaguing him a little bit. Yeah. I don't think that John Jones thought, oh, this guy's about to sock me, so I better create my distance. And we all know John Jones's reach is 84, so I'm sure every gym has a long, lanky guy that's 7 feet tall or 6'8". I know Jones is only 6'4", but he has an unusually long reach, so you can probably find that, you know, whatever it is that you need to find out about it. But to me, it just looked like a big brother moment. So
you ever see when fighters say, man, I didn't expect them to be so big, you know, after the face off. Yeah. I think it's something kind of like that where you're just, it's an old boxing trick. And I think it's just, I just want to make sure that this is, you know, I get to him before he gets to me with my punches. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then Ian Garry, man, Jesus Christ. He came right back.
I don't know what happened. I know Colby Covington came at him really hard. What did Ian Garry do?
So Ian Garry came back and kind of like quoted Will Smith, you know, the whole keep my wife's name out of your mouth, that whole thing. But he kind of came at him as far as being like a guy who's fought for the title so many times, never won. But he did end it with something that I thought was kind of interesting. It'll never happen, but I just thought it was fun. He challenged him to an I quit match. And basically what he said was, no time limit. Let's just fight till somebody says I quit. And whoever says they quit takes off the gloves and never fights again. I just thought it was hilarious.
That's interesting.
And it would be something that I would totally tune in for, right? We saw that in Pride with Sakuraba and Royce Gracie, how long they went. They just kept going and going until finally they just couldn't take it no more, the Gracie team. But that would be pretty interesting. But Ian Garry can crack me up sometimes with some, like, he's in the deepest of holes at times, but he does just enough to kind of climb out of it and make you laugh a little bit. So I thought that was pretty funny of them to do. And then lastly, the Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor, the free Conor McGregor thing. Conor was just talking about being frustrated with where he's at and not getting the fight and blah, blah, blah. And I think Nate Diaz said something along the lines of, that's where I was before I left, but I finally left and was able to kind of control my destiny, saying free Conor McGregor will fight on St. Patrick's Day, you know, that sort of thing. But the one thing that bothers me, George, and I know Danny Segura will disagree with me, I am so over that fight, dude. I don't care. I'd much rather see Conor and Chandler. I'd much rather see Diaz fight Kyle Masvidal again or Jake Paul again. Poirier. There's just nothing to that. It just feels like it would be a standalone fight. They're not the same guys anymore. That ship sailed.
Yeah, I had an appreciation for McGregor saying, I train, and then they changed the date, then I train. Then he finally said, I lose interest. I love when someone shows you the human side, because I'm wondering, what the hell is going on? Why is this thing seen to be on and then off? And he just told us, dude, I'm training, but they keep switching the date, or they keep changing their mind, or this or that, and I just lose interest. And so I go back to just kind of being a rich dude, you know, that's got a lot of power and a lot of connections and enjoying life, and I guess his four kids. But yeah, it's a trip. It really is. There was a little insight there, you know, like he's just frustrated and probably sick of the crap. And with the UFC, they'll always go, oh, yeah, Conor McGregor's a unique individual. Next question. You know, like, I don't really tell you much.
I'm curious to see what that's going to be like after Roadhouse, because they're either going to say, man, he did great in Roadhouse, we should book him for something else. Or they're going to say, man, he sucked, go back to fighting. You know, I think if he looked great and he's able to schmooze with some A-listers here and there, it's just less need to fight at that point. But I think if it bombs, the way to get back in the limelight is to fight again.
The thing about show business is, well, I guess this goes for sports as well. I mean, for sports, you should kind of have a clean 90 days leading into the fight before you go off and party again. Show business looks like you can just Like, I mean, I've seen Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden and Arch Leister just have different types of vices, and I mean derail. But they seem to be far outnumbered by your Robert Downey Jr.'s and Lindsay Lohan's and Charlie Sheen's, you know, because you can kind of still deliver your lines even though you partied the following weekend. You really can't fight, you know, like you got to lose weight and all that and be in decent shape, be in a gym. I don't know what I'm saying, but I guess here's what I'm trying to say. I think you can get in far more trouble being an actor than being an athlete.
Maybe.
They can both get you in trouble, but I think being an athlete just is like a step up.
Could be.
Like, remember Dennis Rodman when he just goes, I need a timeout, and you think he took off from Chicago and went to Vegas for 2 days? Like, that's about as unusual. Huh? Yeah, it's about as unusual as it gets. I mean, because you can just get benched, you can get cut. Like, it can really affect your contract. Like, you can be a wild partier, but if someone wants to cast you in a role, and oh, by the way, it's about a guy that parties, like, you almost might be perfect for it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Or if you're connected. But in sports, you kind of have to deliver with the performances as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to answer the bell. And he did. You know, that's the weird thing. Used to strike
people out. Daryl Strawberry used to hit home runs, and so they got around it somehow.
Yeah.
Anyhow, all right, folks. Every Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, Spinning Back Click. Join us for that. It's live. You can be a part of it by joining the chat room, asking questions, leaving comments. Say this all the time, but we've been kind of trying to rework Spinning Back Click, talking as a group. And I think soon we're going to maybe dedicate a little more time to answering questions from the chat, from those that participate, and maybe just a lesser round or two of questions to the panel. So we'll see. But either way, I try and get to a lot of them, and it's a blast. And last week we had Big John McCarthy, and I think we have some future plans to include some other big names. So tune in. And we'll catch you all on Thursday for the next Junkie Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you had a nice St. Patrick's Day. Go Man U. We're out of here. Go out and be a champion.